Time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Pena, straightaway center field, hit well, all the way back. That ball's gone! Walk it off! Jeremy Pena! Astros win this game on a two-run walk-off home run by the young shortstop, and the celebration is on!
Jeremy Pena mania! This weekend, I'm Vanessa Richardson. Paul Gallant is beside me, and of course, our producer, Sean Mapes. What's up, Sean?
Doing good, Vanessa.
You do this all the time.
What?
Why aren't you asking me how I'm doing first?
Paul, you look... You know what? I do want to say this. Paul looks very dapper today.
Everyone's been making comments about this. Everyone's talking about it at work. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
But since we did bring in Sean first, it was Sean's birthday over the weekend.
Sean!
So happy birthday to Sean Mapes.
I'm so sorry I missed it. Happy belated. We are a show of April birthdays.
Yes, we're all Aries. Is
I think three straight weekends we all had birthdays.
That's right.
Something close to that.
Guys, we should have gone to Vegas.
We should have. Perhaps we still have a chance, perhaps. I don't know. I know the wheelhouse is going to Vegas.
They are going to Vegas.
But, like, why not add in two extra folks? Maybe Sean could come too, you know?
I could get us in anywhere. So if you're serious about
then let's do it.
We'll go.
And it's for work only.
Yeah.
It's not so I can go be a creep at the pools, you know? It's just for work, draft.
Paul's going to have the Vegas fever.
See, now I think you're going to be a creep at the pool. You shouldn't just mention it. I wouldn't have thought about it.
No. Trust me. That's the last thing I would ever do in Vegas. Come on, guys.
Las Vegas will be fun this weekend, and certainly we're going to be talking a lot of NFL draft this week. The Texans picking high, but we start, of course, with the Astros. Carlos Correa, who? PG has moved on.
Listen, baseball, Paul, one of the greatest baseball minds that has ever lived in
Clearly.
Houston. I mean, he really knows baseball, even though he's still struggling to pronounce certain members of a team that he's covered for a decade's name. But I am very excited about Jeremy Pena. And, you know, the best way to get over an ex is to find someone hot right away. And while I don't know if Jeremy Pena is going to continue doing what he has done thus far, whether it's in the field where he is delivering web gem after web gem, and he's added this little Shooter McGavin, pull out
a
pistol.
Yeah, he's fun.
I love that little move that he pulls. It's subtle. It's not too much. Or it's the walk-off home run. I mean, who would have thought that he would be, for the most part, your most consistent player, at least to this point. Early on, obviously, and it's not like he's hitting the cover
right
off of the ball.
But
the,
if you would have asked somebody a month ago or even 2 weeks ago who's going to be the most consistent player for the Astros the first couple of weeks of the season once we get into home games, I don't know that Jeremy Pena would have been at the top of the list for the simple fact also that he's a rookie.
Yeah.
We watched him develop. We knew when he was developing in the Astros system that he was going to be great. But this early on, when you have Kyle Tucker in a slump, obviously Jose Altuve is hurt, Yuli is in a slump. You have this guy, this rookie who has a great energy, who seems really confident, who's able to just get it done. It's been fun to watch.
And you needed him yesterday. I mean, you're down one run. You're facing a sweep at the hand of the Blue Jays, who look like they will be a major challenge for the Astros this year. Though all the games were close, you were possibly facing a fifth straight loss. And on a day where, I mean, you really were taking offense however you could get it, whether you're getting a walked-in run or it's a bad throw to first base on a little dribbler by Jeremy Pena to second base, you needed everything you could get. But this guy, the thing that I like the most and that I think can continue is that he clearly has a lot of confidence in himself. And that couldn't have been easy to step into the shoes of someone like Carlos Correa, who's obviously a World Series hero for the Astros. But Pena has really done that. And I mean, I can't point to an area where I feel really concerned about him. I maybe look at his arm and I still have some questions. Okay, could it be a little stronger? But I mean, the guy can dive and make plays over and over. I don't know what this even means, Vanessa. Again, giant baseball expert, but there's apparently an advanced statistic called outs above average, and Jeremy Pena is one of two players in baseball with at least four outs above average. I don't know what that means, but it sounds awesome.
It sounds like he's doing a good job. I will say this, too. Any concern that you may have or somebody may have with Jeremy Pena, you literally can sum up to him being a rookie and just needing a little bit more time to develop and get smoother. Mm-hmm. There's nothing about him that I think is overtly concerning. And like I said, he's been a bright spot on this team. Dusty Baker said as much. Dusty Baker talked about in the post-game press conference about how before they take on the Rangers, they needed a win. They needed a good win.
Yeah.
And so shout out to Jeremy Pena. Some 10th inning magic. Tied at 6th in the 10th, and Jeremy Pena hits a walk-off. You struggled with moving on from Carlos Correa.
I did.
Right now,
I guess I didn't.
You're in the grief stage of acceptance, I think.
Okay.
Because you had some denial. You had some sadness. You definitely had some anger. And now, I believe on the grief graph that you were in acceptance. So, what are some tricks to moving on from your ex? In this case, it's Carlos Correa. How did you get through the grief process so quickly?
I mean, yeah, as I said before, he's hot. You know? I mean, it's sometimes
we are learning
that
new
simple.
Things about Paul every day.
As someone who is exceptionally shallow, I mean, look, he's shown power. He has been, I think, pretty fearless at the plate. He swings at just about everything, and he's been really good in the field. I think the question is what happens when the honeymoon phase is over, because this is a new thing. It feels like a rebound thing by default because it's not Carlos Correa. I mean, you're now with somebody after having been with the other person for, 7 years.
A long time. That's a long marriage.
That's a long,
but
yeah.
The seven-year itch happened.
7 years is a long marriage these days, too. Good God.
Yeah, it is. And I got a lot of people I know that are bailing after a year or two.
Yeah, two of my best friends, that happened.
Isn't it extraordinary? Here's the thing about that. You sink, what, anywhere from $15,000 to $20,000 for a wedding, and then bachelor parties, and then showers, and then not to mention you, like, spent your, you know, years with that person. What about marriage makes you bail after less than a year?
I don't know, but I think we two millennials look at marriage right now and we're like, I don't know.
I'm good.
I don't know, Jim.
I'm good on that.
Yeah, being a product of divorce definitely is already hurt.
I'm not. My parents had a great marriage. I just see all of that and do not want the 1 year stint.
No. I mean, who does? But listen, you didn't have that with Carlos, and I don't think you're going to have that with Jeremy Pena either. I think the real question is what is going to happen when he faces the inevitable first slump. And now it doesn't seem like that slump is going to take place when he is playing defense. But when that happens, how will he respond? Because I still think that there is a bit of a blueprint to throwing to him. And, you know, just reading about the way Pena hits, he has swung at a lot of things that are outside of the strike zone. He has perhaps not as disciplined an eye as far as what is a strike and what isn't a strike. And, you know, it's going to be best for him as the season progresses to get back in line with what the rest of the Astros do, which is working pitchers counts and just trying to get pitchers to have thrown a bunch early on so that they can, you know, dispatch of just about everybody's mediocre at best bullpen later on in games.
Speaking of pitching, at one point, what would it take for the Astros to say as an organization that they're really missing that special touch of Brent Strom?
I'm not saying that because I don't think that the pitching has been an issue to this point. It, you know, you've had some moments where
it's been the brighter side almost unexpectedly with Lance out.
I mean, yeah, that's the problem. Now, if we want to honestly look back at the series that they just played against Toronto, what was the problem? They couldn't bleeping score again, mm-hmm. like less than four runs on Friday, three. You have an awful strikeout to end the game on a high fastball. You score two runs on Saturday. And yesterday, once again, I get it. You won the game. You scored eight runs. But to get to eight, you had some things go in your favor, you know? I mean, you had a bases-loaded situation, and Alex Bregman walks a guy home. And you had another situation, too, where the Blue Jays just throw the ball away. Outside of Michael Brantley, you know, it's been, I would say, relatively inconsistent, though it was a nice weekend series for Alex Bregman, too.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we're going to talk about all things Astros throughout the day. First, I do want to tell you about a way that you can save some money, so listen up. I know it's a Monday. I know you're tired, but grab your phone. Our friends at TGS Insurance are going to change your life. They're going to deliver huge savings, and you don't even have to talk to a pesky agent. You know you're paying too much for your home insurance, but you probably don't shop for better rates because it's a big hassle. It doesn't have to be anymore thanks to TGS. They've built a new system. It instantly shops over 36 carriers, and you get that full quote in less than 15 seconds, and all you have to do is send that text. So take your phone right now and text MONEY, that's M-O-N-E-Y, to 232323. Their system is going to ask for your home address. Just send that back, and then you get that quote. The savings are legit. The company is legit. The online rating is nearly perfect. And their average customer from last year is saving over $870 on home insurance. No one likes to shop for it. I know it's annoying, but TGS makes it the easiest it's ever been. You're one text away from massive savings. TGS Insurance, get with it, guys. Text MONEY to 232323. Get your home insurance quote and save big today. We'll be right back.
ESPN 97.5.
Hey foodies, the annual Culture Map Tastemaker Awards is back. That means it's time to celebrate the two things we love most, food and drinks. The Tastemaker Awards is an annual celebration of the talent in Houston's restaurant and bar community. Follow along on culturemap.com as we profile the nominees. Then join us on May 25th for our signature tasting event and awards ceremony where we'll unveil the winners. If you love trying the city's best restaurants, you won't want to miss this. Buy tickets now at culturemap.com/TM.
Back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
My co-host Paul Gallant is adulting so hard that he's wearing a three-piece suit with a tie.
It's not a three-piece suit. It's a button-down.
Compared to what he usually wears.
I would never wear a three-piece suit, by the way.
You did? Okay, so one of your friends, what's his name, messaged me on Twitter.
Damn it, Kyle.
Of a picture of you. This was St. Patrick's Day weekend.
I wore a shirt with a tie.
He wore a shirt with a tie on a date.
It wasn't a date. It was, we were out at a fancy restaurant. I didn't feel like wearing a jacket.
Your friend messaged me and told me to make fun of you on air, and I never did. So this
drives me crazy. Maybe this was Brad then. I don't know. It's one of those two.
I don't remember which one it was.
These people in my friend group, they take pictures of you. And you don't know when they're going to pop back up. But good God, there's no way I could ever run for office because the amount of pictures of me in an other state, if you will, not good. Not good, Vanessa.
Yeah.
It's like a laptop.
It was a guy named Sean.
Oh, interesting.
Do you know him?
I do know Sean.
Oh, okay.
Great name on that guy.
Yeah. Thanks, Sean Mapes.
Please roast him for wearing a tie to dinner on a date in Chicago.
I don't know why he thought it was a date. Anyway, it wasn't.
It's the picture of you and a blonde girl, but she is cute. Huh? I'll give you that. Paul gets girls.
I don't know what you're talking about.
So unlike Paul to be with a blonde. All right. All right. This weekend, guys, NFL draft. Woo! So excited. Happening in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Gonna be fun. Not a whole lot of prospects going.
What do you mean by that? Oh, but just going to watch the draft.
Well, not a lot of
not a big green room?
Yeah, it's not a big green room.
Why?
It's a better way of putting it.
It's Vegas. What are these kids thinking?
I don't know.
You're 21. It's not, you know, if you're 20, I would get it. But you're 21 years old. Wouldn't you want to go?
I mean, would think so. Maybe their moms want them to stay focused.
That definitely could be it. What's funny is right after I turned 21, my mom took me to Vegas, and me being a completely clueless person, I thought, oh, wow, my mom's taking me to Vegas for my 21st birthday. Turned out that she was actually getting married to my stepdad.
Wait,
in Vegas.
What?
Yeah, I didn't know at all. Then
surprised you on a birthday trip by getting married.
I thought it was a birthday trip. No, they just were waiting for me to turn 21 to go because they like Vegas a lot. It was a lot of fun.
Good for your mom.
I had an awful bowl cut at the time. It was bad.
Can't wait to see those picks.
Nope, that's never seeing the light of day.
So the Texans have high draft picks.
Yes.
And this is unique not only for the Texans, but the man in charge. Nick Caserio, obviously, before he was in Houston, was in New England. I mean, they really didn't have high draft picks a lot. So I'm excited to see what Nick Caserio does. He has called this draft, quote, a crapshoot. It's very unpredictable. The Texans, as of now, sit at having that number 3 pick. which doesn't seem to be traded, and then that number 13 overall pick. What are your predictions for what could happen this weekend?
Well, I don't think they're going to be able to trade out. And if they're at number three, I think the odds of them getting the two biggest names that we've been hearing, the two pass rushers of Aiden Hutchinson or Trevon Walker, that seems to be getting lower. They're not going to take a quarterback. So if I had to make a prediction about who they go after, I do think that they're probably going to end up picking one of those offensive linemen, whether it's Ekwonu from NC State or it's Neal from Alabama. But if I were the Texans, I would go with Derek Stingley. Derek Stingley Jr. is the one that excites me the most. I get it. He's a cornerback. He's not a pass rusher. But I feel like it's so hard to find corners that could be potentially that special. And he has shown a level that he plays at that very few other cornerbacks have gone up regularly, whether in practice or just in the SEC week to week, the amount of skill that Derek Stingley Jr. did. And I get it. Maybe the last couple of years hasn't been the same player, but I would just say go back to 2019. And then if you play on a team like that, that's that good. And then the year afterwards where there's questions about Ed Orgeron and how committed maybe he was the year afterwards and the same thing, I can understand how somebody maybe would check out. So Stingley is the one who I would like to see the Texans pick. And honestly, as someone who used to cover the Seahawks too, it was the same thing. Like I want to see Derek Stingley go top 10. I feel like that guy's going to be really special.
I think it's going to be interesting to see how it goes down. And I think that Friday morning could be absolutely chaotic.
Of course.
Once everything happens on Thursday, once that first round is through, does Malik Willis go, you know, in the top 10? Is it Kenny Pickett? Is there going to be any quarterback in the top 10?
I've been hearing more and more from the draft experts that maybe we don't see a quarterback taken in the top 10, which would really surprise me. But as I have been thinking about it, you know, the only team that really makes sense to draft a quarterback in the top 10 is Carolina. But the only reason that they would be drafting a quarterback is to save Matt Rhule's job. And that's not a smart way to operate as an organization. Hey, our
coach.
They
did pay him a lot of money.
That's true, but I mean, Dave Tepper can afford it. As far as coaches go,
Dave Tepper can afford anything.
Yeah, he's the richest owner in the NFL. So I think that if you're the Panthers, you shouldn't be drafting a quarterback just to keep Matt Rhule around. Matt Rhule should not have essentially the power or a lot of authority when it comes to the old draft war room, as they call it, in terms of like being able to stand up for a specific player. Because, yeah, if you miss on Pickett or on Willis or somebody else, then that could set the Panthers even further back than they're already set back, a draft class where they don't have a pick after that first pick that they have until the fourth round, if I'm not mistaken.
We are finally to the week of the NFL draft. Lovey loves pass rushers. We know this from his past. Mm-hmm. And Nick Caserio has said that this is going to be a group effort.
Yeah.
That he's going to be taking notes and he's going to listen to the scouts. He's going to listen to his front office. And he has said that he'll listen to Lovey. How much influence do you think Lovey gets? Because we know he has a defensive mind. We mm-hmm. know he's talked a lot about wanting corners. You know, how much influence do you think Lovey Smith gets in this draft?
It's a good question because it's hard for me to buy into the idea that the Texans looked at Lovey Smith as a long-term hire when they brought him in just because of his age. This isn't someone that strikes me as he's going to be our next head coach for the next 5 years.
Right.
Obviously, they maybe feel that way right now, but I imagine the only way that they feel that way right now is if they talk themselves into confidence about it after the fact. This was a weird, out-of-nowhere hire at the last second. Like, we got to go back to that. That was a very awkward transition.
Never forget. Yeah, it was Josh McCown. Oh, some people say, it probably would have been Brian Flores. Regardless, we know that Lovey was not in the top three.
Yes.
That the Texans account tweeted out.
And then Sunday news dump.
He became the head coach.
Right.
So, I actually liked the hire, but the way that it was, the way that it came to be. Mm-hmm. And the amount of money they had to pay David Culley is astronomical.
It was.
And good for David Culley.
But look, here, you know, people rip them for that. I would rip them for going with Culley, but I don't think they had many options. And I, once again, will continue to say, if you don't like the hire that you made, fire him.
Yeah, don't linger on it.
You're an NFL team with a ton of money. You are a lot like these college football programs who have the money to burn. You know, if you made a mistake, admit you made the mistake, eat the money. I'd rather make the mistake and eat the money and move on as opposed to trying to make something work that clearly is never going
to
work.
You and I actually agree on this because the amount of people that want guys to be given a second chance or second, Carson Wentz is actually a great example. Well, why would you, you know, give him another chance? No,
he's
don't give him another
chances.
Chance.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's especially so, I mean, I think you and I agree on that for sure.
There's a certain point where I think people believe that someone can grow into a role, whether it be as a coach or as a player, and you feel like, hey, I just have to be patient. And then you'll think up examples of how this person wasn't all that right away, but he became all that. Say Josh Allen as a quarterback. But people like that, coaches or players, they are, I would say, exceptions as opposed to things right. that are continuously going to repeat themselves. And I think if you should know, have a pretty good idea of somebody if you're going to commit to them, whether as a coach or as a player, long term. So to circle back with Cully, it didn't seem like he was getting any better as a head coach. Now with Lovey, and to go back to your earlier question, I do think that he will have some input. You've said Smith likes pass rushers. There is something, this is uncharted waters for Nick Caserio, just being a general manager who is in the big boy chair for the first mm-hmm. time and having first round picks, multiple first round picks to work with. I don't know if the New England Patriots, when he was back there, if they had had a top 10 pick, I don't think that they ever would have gone after a pass rusher. And I don't know what the logic is behind it. Maybe it's a fear that down the road you're going to have to pay a pass rusher if you end up drafting him in the top 10 or something like that. But for some reason, it doesn't seem like pass rusher is that much of a possibility early on. And I'm really just basing this off of a track record in New England where the only time that I remember them going after a pass rusher and it worked out was when they drafted Chandler Jones towards the back of the 2012 draft. But they didn't keep him long term, you know. They traded him. And they got a good return for him, but look what he's been doing in Arizona and like what he will continue to do in Vegas.
We had heard Nick Caserio say that there wasn't a lot of interest in that number three pick. Adam Schefter tweeted something this morning that basically confirmed that, quote, within the past week as the draft has drawn closer, multiple teams in the top half of the draft have inquired with others to try to trade back in the first round per sources. So far, the interest in moving back in Thursday's draft has greatly exceeded the interest in moving up.
Yeah, that's not surprising. And it's a difficult spot to be put in when there's no consensus number one and there's no, I mean, right now you saw, and this is from Pro Football Network today, Vanessa, where per Tony Pauline, the Jaguars have a crisis in terms of what they want to do first overall. Yeah. Shad Khan apparently wants Aiden Hutchinson. He's the boss. And Trent Baalke, who somehow has a job, he wants to go after Trevon Walker from Georgia first overall. So, I mean, that's always tricky when the boss wants someone and the general manager, whose job is to scout and evaluate talent, wants somebody else.
It's the biggest day of the year for the general manager. They all like having control. You don't get in the position of general manager without being a man that really, really likes control. But to your point, when we get the shots of the war rooms on draft Thursday, Friday, Saturday, especially
I'm
Thursday.
It's called a war room, by the way. Yeah, like, shut up.
I'm going off of what it's been called.
Right, now, I understand you. I'm just like, calm down.
When you see those shots of certain franchises that you know the owner is very involved in, and the Jags are one. Like, I don't think if you overanalyze the Texans' war room and the footage that you're going to notice Cal McNair calling Nick Caserio and demanding something. The Jags may be an interesting war room type scenario. Remember when Bill O'Brien yelled at Jack Easterby over the phone and you saw it on camera?
Yeah.
Will we see kind of a Bill and Jack moment with Trent Baalke and Shad Khan?
No, because I'm pretty sure that Shad Khan will just say, like, Trent, shut up. You're lucky to have a job.
Even though I made my money selling, what, brakes, motors? It was like the car bumpers how Shad Khan became a billionaire.
Wow, that's a if he invented that, nice invention. I'm sure he didn't. Trent Baalke having a job is honestly a miracle. Like, the guy has never done anything good. I mean, you could argue that he is the reason that the San Francisco 49ers and the Jim Harbaugh era just went up completely in flames, which led to them having to hire old Jim Tomsula, who infamously farted at his opening press conference.
That happens, man, though. Sometimes it's
I mean, listen, yes, gas
you.
Does happen, but I mean, you know.
Sean Kahn built his fortune by launching Flexengate, a company that manufactures trunk bumpers.
Okay. No relation to Flex Seal and Phil Steele?
I don't think so.
Phil Steele here for Flex Seal. I have a door. I'm going to cut a hole in it, and now it's going to be a boat. Phil
Good
Steele.
For Sean Kahn. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, baseball is back and dominated the headlines this weekend. Say it isn't so. That's next.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.
Listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Wisely, he didn't throw anything back at him, but they continued to throw stuff at him. And he's like, yeah, big guy, you want to talk tough from up there and throw stuff. But, I mean, unbelievable. Well, yeah, you got to walk away from it.
Unbelievable, yet totally believable. Yankees fans acting trashy and throwing things at Cleveland Indy. I mean, Guardians players.
It's the Bronx. Forget about it.
Let's start with this, baby. Baseball is back. I mean,
all the wrong reasons.
All the wrong reasons, but entertainment is entertainment. And year-round, my friend, it's the NFL. We've talked about this during the Combine. When Tom Brady unretired, it totally overshadowed March Madness. The NFL Combine overshadowed, like, the Pro Bowl. Or not the Pro Bowl. NFL Combine overshadowed the lockout. I mean, there was a lot. There's been a lot going on with the NFL, and every month seems to be dominated by it. I will say this, over the weekend, baseball, some big storylines. This was one of them.
Yeah, and I love just how it's right after the Yankees won a game on a walk-off hit, and their first move is to throw beer bottles at the Guardians outfielders. And then when the Guardians outfielders thought about maybe going all Malice in the Palace on them, Miles Straw, Astros legend, climbing up the fence.
Love it.
Getting in his face. And you got a dude who's a Yankees fan who is standing behind someone, and ironically, check that, unironically, is holding up a triangular hand gesture, implying that the man is a not man part, mm-hmm. if mm-hmm. you will.
Great job describing that.
Thank you.
That was classier than I would have.
The PG version of it. And in the background, you have Vanessa, New York, New York, by the classiest New Yorker of all time, Frank Sinatra.
Frank Sinatra.
And in the background, it's tough to you, New York. Oh, I just think it's perfect. Just animals in the Bronx. They're disgusting, dirty people.
Yes, and I loved that Miles Straw, by the way, goes to his press conference media availability, and instead of saying, you know what, I'm really sorry that I went into the stands, I should have held back my emotions, doubled down. Yes, Miles Straw, and as Matt Young wrote in the Houston Chronicle, 29 other baseball teams need a statue of Miles Straw because he is willing to confront Yankees fans and call them out. I love it. Also, if you're a grown person and you're throwing things on a baseball field, you should be banned from the ballpark, from all MLB ballparks.
But how do you do that? Because, I mean, all Yankee fans look the same. You know, they're trashy people wearing, you know, generally some sort of a wife beater shirt, a gold chain, and their Yankee jersey that's unbuttoned. They all look the same to me. So it's one thing to, hey, kick this person out to ban them. But, I mean, if they buy tickets,
at least make the gesture.
How are they actually going to prevent them from going into the stadium, though? That's my question. You know, I just remember this past year when I was in Seattle going to Mariners games, I thought that they were, because Seattle took the COVID stuff so seriously, I thought like they were going to take a look at the vaccination cards and all sorts of things. No, they didn't care at all. Like, once you got to the stadium, you got in. Who's actually going to enforce keeping an outright ban of somebody for life? Like, are you going to have some sort of
facial recognition
software? Right. Like, there's no way to actually keep these people out.
You probably can't is the answer. But I think at least sending the message that they're going to try when you act a fool like that and when you're that disrespectful of another human being playing baseball, I think is important to at least try.
I think I have the solution. Have you seen the movie Braveheart?
No.
Okay. Well, in the movie Braveheart, there is this scene where William Wallace and his right-hand man are taking part in this, like, Scottish stone-throwing competition.
Okay.
And the big guy throws a giant boulder at William Wallace and misses, and William Wallace gets a rock, and he throws it back, and he hits the big guy right in the face. So they're throwing rocks at each other.
Yeah.
Okay, if somebody throws a beer bottle at you, a baseball player, you, the baseball player, should be allowed to have that person come right back and for you to throw it back at him.
I agree.
It'd be like the rules of a duel where, you know, everyone gets a pistol, you get one shot. I feel like this would be perfect. And the baseball player is going to have the edge here because the baseball player, he is throwing something like he has thrown for his entire life. And I mean, if you give him a 12-ounce can, oh, man, he's going to be able to whip that thing. It's not that different from a baseball. So, yeah, I feel like that should be the retaliation that is allowed back. And I get it. It's violent. It's sadistic. It's disgusting for me to even think of it. Whatever. There is only one way to curb stuff like this. It is eye for an eye, Hammurabi-style stuff.
I actually agree with you on that, and I think that the world would be a better place if you could punch somebody in the face when they disrespected you, per Mike Tyson, kind of like Mike Tyson did on the plane.
Yeah, I don't think we'll ever quite get that, though.
No, we won't. I'm just saying it would make the world a little more just.
That's fair.
God bless the nuns in my hometown of Terre Haute, Indiana, that every time there is a execution at the Terre Haute Penitentiary, protest for saving lives, but sometimes an eye for an eye just works better.
Yeah, just, you know,
hot takes.
Yeah.
All right. Meanwhile, Dodgers,
we both subscribe to Hammurabi's code, Babylonian legend.
Meanwhile, the Padres played the Dodgers, and there was also an incident in the crowd.
Yeah. Oh boy, Vanessa. Guess who started it? A Dodgers fan starting a fight? Oh, I would never. But yep, in San Diego, it's a Dodgers fan fighting a Padres fan, and with the exact kind of vocabulary and diction that you would expect from a Dodgers fan.
It's LA, mother.
It's LA, mother bleep. What's up? What's up? And look, I mean, credit to him feeling comfortable fighting random Padres fans in a stadium largely full of Padres fans, but that is Dodgers. I mean, I suppose it's better than, you know, someone stabbing somebody else in a parking lot or beating somebody in the back of the head in a parking lot, which is like generally the headlines that you read about Dodgers fans leaving the ravine. But I mean, on brand, Yankees fans and Dodgers fans in one weekend. We don't even have anything about the Phillies. Good job, Philadelphia. You didn't do anything horrible this weekend.
Do we?
Oh, wait, you're right.
Yeah. Let me give a shout-out to Middletown native and former Indiana Hoosier Kyle Schwarber. Very classy guy, mild-mannered, and I've met Kyle a few times. Super, super kind.
Okay.
But he got a little salty, and all of America should thank him for his response.
Hell yeah. Baseball?
Called strike three, and Schwarber is thrown out of the game, and he had zero issue with getting thrown out, making it very clear. You've missed him inside, outside, up and down. Kyle Schwarber thrown out after being punched out by Angel Hernandez.
Shocker on who that umpire was.
Angel Hernandez is the worst.
Right.
And before we get to Angel Hernandez, I got to say, Schwarber's demonstration after it happened, because it was a horrible call. Schwarber was like in his prime Bobby Cox.
Yes.
In his prime Lou Piniella, looking like a manager out there, doing the best temper tantrum that I think I've seen in a really long time. It was a fabulous display.
It was theatrical. It was passionate. It was, I'm doing this on behalf of everybody else that you've screwed over.
If it was the floor routine in gymnastics, I mean, that would have gotten a 10 or whatever they grade on a scale of. And amazingly, guess what? A Philadelphia fan made headlines, but actually I feel like for a somewhat
reasonable
yeah. way. He was driving out of the stadium, Angel Hernandez, and a Philly fan basically told him to bleep off, and Hernandez enjoyed it. Hernandez enjoyed it because it's an ump show for Angel Hernandez. But listen, if this is the stuff that gets baseball back, I'm not going to lie. I kind of enjoy it. Like, I like this kind of drama because, oh, it's an old man gentleman's game and you're not supposed to show any emotions. Blah, 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 blah,
blah,
blah.
That's led to worse ratings. That's led to the least amount of marketing availability for the players and opportunities. So if this works,
trashy fans. Trashy fans and bad umps.
And guys like Kyle Schwarber getting passionate and letting umpires know how they feel. I love it. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Galan, a little edition of In Case You Missed It Monday. And yes, of course, we got to tie in Paul's Lord and Savior. That's next.
Well, hello.
To call into the HR&P listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Disappointed by your HR and payroll technology? Maybe you need to outsource your administration. Go to HRP.net to learn more. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Galant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right. We are rolling along on a Monday, and of course, we can never get everything into the first hour of the show because it's busy. We have a lot to talk about. So this is our new segment called In Case You Missed It.
Because, look, it's a long weekend. It's not just fitting everything into the first hour on Monday. It's also things happen on Friday and Saturday that I would imagine a lot of people had no idea happened.
Right.
So we try to bring them back up.
You're grilling. You're out to eat with your family. You're at your kid's Little League game, et cetera, et cetera. Let's start in the baseball world. Cabrera, Miggy, hit number 3,000.
You know what's crazy about this? We're not going to see a milestone like this for a really long time. And we'll talk about this a little bit later on. Astros that maybe have a chance to get to a career milestone. Yeah. But, you know, if you take a look at Mike Trout's statistics, the guy that you would think, oh, yeah, he's definitely going to have 3,000 hits someday. And, I mean, I think right now, and he's in his early 30s, he's at like 1,700 or something like that. So it's... it's going to be a while until we see somebody else get to 3,000. And it also might be a while, too, until we see somebody else get 500 home runs. And if I'm not mistaken, Cabrera is in both, which is pretty damn impressive. It's a shame that the guy hasn't had more success over the course of his career, you know, being
in Detroit,
stuck with the Tigers. Yeah,
it was cool to see Matthew Stafford was there, actually, when Miggy made the hit. And it just was kind of a stark reminder of how much moving to a different team can make a difference. But, of course, Stafford, having spent so much time in Detroit, became friends with Miggy, and so he wanted to be there for
just it. Just a stark reminder that Detroit is a depressing sports town, too.
It is, but don't ever say that to anybody from Detroit, that it's depressing in regards to anything. People
but
from
it is,
Detroit,
though.
I agree, but people from Detroit do not play around.
Oh, that's true. They're like, hey, we're on the come up.
Yeah,
we're still on the come up. We have Bryan Cranston voicing Ford commercials.
When I covered the Texans Thanksgiving Day game there 2 years ago, that was we got there at night, the photographer and I, and it was Detroit is still Detroit. Nice city. There's some cool stuff going on, but yeah, Miggy making his 3,000th hit was definitely a cool thing over the weekend.
Seems like it could be nice.
It's got a great like Motown history of music and all that.
It's on the water.
Yeah, but yeah, Detroit's still sports-wise still Detroit. You have something about one of our coworkers.
This is a great text. It was in conversation. The last segment that we were in, we were talking about like just scumbag Yankee fans being on brand. And I said, yeah, the average Yankee fan, he's going to show up at the park. He's going to have a wife beater on. He's going to have a gold chain. And he's probably going to be wearing a Yankees jersey, but it's going to be completely unbuttoned. And someone texted,
that's a great point.
Have you ever seen Jake Asman in a wife beater with a gold chain? And my answer is all the time. Like, Jake Asman, you know, as soon as he comes in here, like, he looks all proper, you know, like, broadcast professional. But as soon as he's off the clock, you know, he puts a toothpick in his mouth and he starts walking around and saying, like, hey, you've never been to New York. You don't know what it's like in the Bronx, huh? You don't know what it's like to be a Yankee fan. No, you
isn't
know, 27 rings.
Jake's a Mets fan, though.
I have no idea if he
is
or not.
Yeah, Jake's a Mets
all
fan.
All New Yorkers, you look the
but
same.
To your point.
No, he's a Yankees fan.
Why did I think he was a Mets fan?
I think because he's also a Jets fan.
Generally,
and I think Jets and Yankees is a weird mix.
He's Yankees and Jets?
Yes.
We need to talk about this.
No, that's good for him. That's good. Because usually...
takes a little bit of humble pie.
Yeah.
With
it means he is actually like not the worst, you know? Because Yankee Giant fans, the funny thing about them is Giants fans very often will slip over and root for the Jets, even though they act like they only root for the Giants, where Jets fans are a lot more loyal and only stick to the Jets. But
what a depressing city to be a football fan in.
It's been a pretty depressing sports city of late. I mean, yeah. The Mets all of a sudden investing money into the team, and now the Mets might be a favorite. Great, but the Yankees have been like the best team in town for the last half decade, and they have been massive disappointments. Giants stink, Jets stink, Knicks stink. I don't know what's going on in hockey and don't really care, but all of those things. Yeah, it ain't good. But Jake Asman, known to walk around with a giant gold chain.
I love wife beaters, by the way.
You do?
I went through a phase when I was a kid. Yeah, I have pictures on my phone. Where
with the shirt, right.
Not actual men that beat their wives.
Okay, good, good.
I just wore wife beaters for like a year straight.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, that was my thing.
Okay, interesting. Well, listen, I mean, everyone's got a look. I don't think I could pull it off because I'm just too pasty.
Well, you wear three-piece suits to work.
It's not a three-piece suit.
The Nationals, meanwhile, not happy with the Giants for stealing second in the ninth with the six-run lead.
See, this is more baseball. Like, all of the headlines are, hey, here is someone getting really worked up for no reason. And, yeah, some random reliever is mad because this guy stole second on a pop that bloops into center field, and he's running from first to second, and he gets thrown out at the plate by a mile. And as the Nationals walk into the dugout, they're pointing at the Giants, and they're like, hey, what was that about? Hey! Like, it's a big deal. So you see it happen, and you think to yourself, okay, over the weekend, this is like just a heat-of-the-moment thing. No! The after the game, the next day before the game where they have the manager being interviewed, Dave Martinez of the Nationals was asked by Candace Buckner about his overall philosophy when ahead in games. He said that the Washington Nationals don't run up the score. This is such loser stuff. Like, what are you so upset about? A team trying to score more runs. It is always possible for a team to come back from down six runs. Like, that's not insurmountable in one inning. It's not likely to happen, but this running up the score, unwritten rule stuff in baseball, for whatever reason, it really feels like it's in baseball more than any other sport. You see it in basketball from time to time, too, where somebody goes for
baseball,
a late dunk.
Yeah, baseball's the only sport where there's the gentleman, polite, what are you thinking? It's a handshake understanding.
It's so strange.
That seems to be the only sport to me.
I don't get it.
There's a little bit of that in racing. Not that we're big racing. There's a little bit in racing about like when you pass somebody, the way that you do it, is that person your teammate? There's a little bit of it there. Like okay. You said, maybe a little bit of it in basketball. But baseball is the only sport where managers, there is that like handshake general rule.
Why though? I mean,
dumb. I agree. Dumb.
My big thing is if you're playing a game and the game is still taking place, shouldn't you be giving it your all? At all moments, unless it is completely in hand. And baseball is one of those sports where, okay, it's also an individually oriented sport. So you're just supposed to strike out or not try to hit a home run or not try to swing to get a ball in play if you're winning by a certain amount because you're going to get beaned by some jackass pitcher the next time that you're out. It's very strange.
Meanwhile, your Lord and Savior, as always, putting on for his city, putting on for his team.
Mm.
Tom Brady and the Bucks restructured his contract, creating over $9 million of added salary cap space for Tampa Bay.
You know what you were doing there, putting on for his city. You know what you were doing there. You're not going to get under my skin today.
Tampa Bay is his city. He loves Tampa Bay.
No,
it's Tampa Bay Tom.
No.
It's literally the most important city to him. In fact, when he fake retired, he didn't even mention the Patriots.
I don't have a comeback. I'm just mad that you're bringing this up.
So Tom Brady restructuring his contract.
He's doing it for his teammates.
He is? No, that I'm actually in a weird way, although I am trying to get under your skin. This is one of the reasons why Tom Brady is on good teams, not only because he's the GOAT, but because he is.
That's why Peyton Manning never won anything, because he always wanted, you know.
Oh, other than a Super Bowl. Oh, and then another Super Bowl in a different city.
But right, in Denver.
So, okay.
Because he got kicked out because he wasn't good anymore.
But Tom Brady creating that cap space, okay? We really know how to make each other.
Well, I have to, you know, it's my only defense mechanism is just to lash out at Peyton Manning. That's all I have.
It's April and we're having Colts, Pats, Pats fights already.
Oh, it's going to get ugly.
Do they play this year?
No.
They did last year, though. Oh, the Colts.
The Colts one. And then, but, you know, subsequently lost to the Raiders and the Jags. So, anyway, I do, with all seriousness, whether or not you hate Tom Brady or love Tom Brady, this is one of the things that makes him a great player. He's willing to do this for his team ahead of the draft, adding salary cap space.
It's strange that he has been so willing to do it for so long, because you would think that at some point he would be like, nah, I've done it enough.
Right.
And, you know, everyone always says, oh, well, his wife is Gisele Bündchen, who's making a bleep ton of money on the side. So that might make it a little bit easier for him to say, no, I want to win. I want to make it easy. But it is weird that he seems to be, of all the quarterbacks that we've seen, the great quarterbacks, he has never been like going out of his way to get the number one contract. Where you have seen that with Aaron Rodgers. You have seen that with Peyton Manning. You have seen that with Patrick Mahomes. It's weird that he's the only one to do it. Because honestly, I totally get why all of those other players would be like, no, I want to get mine. But
he's also involved in so many other businesses. He has his own like line of sleep and CBD products and
TB12. It's strange though. To like, at a certain point, you would think, and again, we're talking about money that we'll never see in our lives ever. But it is strange to think that there's never a, oh well, hey, wait, this actually could cost me here. And when you're making all of these extra deals off the field too, yeah, like what is Patrick Mahomes making for those State Farm commercials? What is Patrick Mahomes?
Good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Right. Or anything else that he endorses. Like, because he, I'm sure, has a ton. Doesn't he endorse like Heinz ketchup or something like that too?
Yeah, he did.
So, I mean, he's got a ton of things going on. And yet, these guys take the massive deals that end up kind of hamstringing their teams in a way. It is interesting that Brady's been the only guy to do it.
Yeah. Good for Tom Brady. I got to give him that. All right. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, Pena Mania. Jeremy Pena delivers. And we go through which Astros player we think will have a special milestone. That's next.
This is Heisman Trophy winner and College Football Hall of Fame, Mike Rozier, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.